Hello, and welcome to the first launch of the Space Cadets podcast. My name is Todd, and I love space. Luckily for me, so do a few of my friends. We decided one day that it would be cool to create a show where we get to discuss the latest in astronomy, astrophysics, and the exploration of our universe. And thus, the Space Cadets podcast was born. So what is this show? Well, it's just a group of friends with no true scientific training talking about things that we struggle to understand ourselves. We know physics and science can be dense at times, so our goal is to make the science digestible, conversational, and above all, fun. And with that, since it's our first show, why don't we go around the horn and introduce ourselves?
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
It's time to kick back and grab a beer, because the Space Cadets are here. Talking about space and the universe, let's all be giant science nerds. We're the Space Cadets, yeah, we're the Space Cadets.
And with that, Alex, let's toss it over to you, man. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? My name is Alex. I'm a physician, and I like to think of myself as a little amateur astronomer on the weekends when I can escape the city lights.
All right. What about you, Mark? How you doing tonight?
What's going on, guys? I'm Mark. My occupation is completely irrelevant. We can all just assume for the sake of this conversation that I'm an astrophysicist. And due to having some family in town and needing a quiet place, I'm sitting in a concrete basement right now.
Well, I saw an article today about a comet that is, or an asteroid that might come and hit Earth in the next 50 or so years. So hopefully that place is asteroid-proof.
Maybe. Is it shaped like Oumuamua?
I don't know. But with that, Nate, Mr. Oumuamua, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, guys, I'm Nathan. I live in New York City. I love space. I can't see any stars from the city, but sometimes when I'm leave the city, I could see stars.
Wait, excuse me. Interruption here. I just got a notification from my SkyGuide app that the International Space Station is going to be flying over my house in 5 minutes.
Wow.
How are you going to see it from your basement?
I'm not.
Have you ever seen it before?
Yeah, a couple times.
That'll be a fun fact for a later episode, is how many times that thing orbits the Earth in a day. Do you know that answer, actually? We could probably look that up pretty quick.
A lot of
zero.
Space.
A gun? You brought a gun into space?
Wait, maybe we should make this episode about Armageddon and the fact that they had, for some reason, a Gatling gun on an oil rig in space.
Great movie. One of the best movies.
Oh, man. You know, Joe Rogan's got a podcast, and he's got a guy that that looks up all these facts for him in, like, real time. So he's got a little bit of an advantage, but 16 times, that's how many times that International Space Station's going around the Earth each day, according to,
nice.
To the interwebs. Wow. So cool. Maybe we'll spend an episode talking about that at some point. But what I thought we'd talk about today, boys, are black holes. Quick little pop quiz. I'll throw it out to the group. Does anybody know what the name of the black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy is?
Oh, I do not.
It is Sagittarius A star. That's the name of it.
Nice.
But the star part is just like a little asterisk that they put next to the A. So it kind of looks like Sagittarius A asterisk.
So according to NASA, most stellar black holes lead isolated lives and are impossible to detect.
Wow.
That's depressing.
It sounds like some people I know. Well,
I want to be a stellar black hole when I grow up.
Yeah, it's better than the alternative. So, so what are the other ones though? There's also
Is there only one alternative to being a stellar black hole?
An unstellar black hole.
Unstellar.
But there's different sizes of black holes, and that's what denotes the name.
I believe there are two different types of black holes. You know, I don't have that information directly in front of me, Todd.
I believe,
but
it's,
if you give me a second, I'll look it up for you.
I believe
I'm gonna say there's three kinds.
Yeah, there are the little tiny black holes that formed early on in the formation of the universe when all matter was extremely close together.
Right.
So everything was able to kind of congeal and squish together, forming these itty bitty black holes that kinda got blasted out everywhere.
I think those were called primordial black holes, if I'm not mistaken.
They were, and there's actually a theory that there is a planet 9 in our solar system that might be a primordial black hole.
So, Mark, I just read an article recently this week about that, because what they're saying now is that they think those black holes are what is causing the universe to continue to expand more rapidly, right? So, like, because there was all these theories where people were saying, oh, the universe started obviously with, you know, the Big Bang. Maybe they don't even know if that's the case anymore. And then it continued to expand and then maybe it was contracting. But science has now proven that it's continuing to expand. Right. So, you know, one of the things that they were saying is the creation of these primordial black holes is what's actually driving that, and that they're made of dark matter as opposed to energy wells. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
So are those of a certain size, or?
I would assume they're some size. I don't know. I don't know what the size specifically would.
Because I'm really interested in the supermassive black holes. Those are like the biggest ones of all.
Well, we just saw a picture of one of those.
You would be.
Is that the M87 black hole that you're talking about, Todd?
That is. Although I'm embarrassed, I was telling everybody when that picture came out. So they took that picture in April 2017. The picture got released last year.
I believe it's 2019.
That the photo got released? Well, they took
April 2019. They took it in April 2017.
That's right. Yeah, because it was so much data to compile it into one image.
Right.
But it looked just like the thing from Interstellar. And so I was telling everybody it was called Gargantua for a while.
Did they believe you?
Yeah, because like
people believe anything about space.
As our hopefully our listeners, you know, are looking to us for some information, which is a scary thing. But, you know, people don't really know about black holes.
So why don't we start with the largest known supermassive black hole? This one's called TUN 618, and it is a very distant and extremely luminous quasar. Technically, a hyperluminous broad absorption line radio loud quasar located in the North Galactic Pole.
Interesting.
Guess how many, each one of you guys now, please guess how many solar masses TUN 618 is comprised of.
Ooh, masses.
Let's define a solar mass, right? A solar mass is, one solar mass is our sun, right?
The mass of our sun, not the size of our sun.
Correct. It's 2 × 10⁻³⁰ kgs.
Wow.
Is one solar mass?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this is 10,000 solar masses.
It's probably.
I'm going to go with a trillion.
Maybe like a couple million, maybe like 40 million. Higher. Nathan is sticking his finger to the sky right now in front of me. What do you got, Nate?
66 billion times the mass of the
Holy
sun.
Dude, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Price is right. I went way over, so I got smoked on that one.
Wow. So that's
solar mass, Bob.
So that's crazy, though, because. So have you guys heard of the Schwarzschild radius? Do you know what that is? Let's drop some knowledge. Yeah. So Mark, what you can explain.
Tell
what
us.
So it is a function. I'm not going to explain the mathematics of it because I quite honestly don't remember exactly what they are. But essentially, if you were to take any math and you were to crush it down, it will eventually reach a small enough size where when it reaches a specific density, it is ultimately going to compress into a singularity. And then the Schwarzschild radius is the size of it would basically be the radius of the event horizon surrounding that singularity or that black hole.
Top quiz number two: what is the size that the Earth would need to be compacted down to reach that point?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, says Nate. What do you think, Alex? You've been quiet for a while.
Yeah, I would say smaller than that. I would say the size of Manhattan.
I'm going smaller. I'm saying smaller.
Wow. I'm going watermelon, Bob.
Watermelon seed.
All right. Well, this will be a length that some of you guys are familiar with. 1 inch.
Wow.
Yeah. Take it down to 1 inch and we become a little black hole. But you know, you can compress anything down to a black hole. All right. We're getting kind of off track here. But I think the most important thing, you know, that's recently come out is in terms of dark matter and the expansion of the universe and what part black holes play in relation to all of this, right? So we know 5% of the universe is regular matter. The rest is made up of dark matter and dark energy. We've never seen either of those things. We're starting to understand that there's new elements and pieces and things like that are floating around that we're starting to learn more about. There's a new theory that the reason why space is expanding so much is there's actually like these webs or these tunnels that are being formed, you know, as a result of these black holes. So if you think about, I gave you guys this example in a text this week, a cube of gelatin, right, inside of a plastic like container with the top missing. And
the black hole would be a point where, you know, something breaks the skin of the top of that piece of gelatin, it goes down the middle of it, right? And so you can get from one point to point A to point B.
Are those wormholes?
So that's a good way to visualize what a wormhole would be like, right? Because like even when you think about black holes, a black hole in our mind is just like an opening. It's like a hole, like a pothole in the street. But in reality, it's really an orb, right? It's like a planet that's just that small and you can't see, right? So a wormhole, you know, space is three-dimensional. So you think about a wormhole, it has to have that kind of pathing. It has to have that kind of flow through space and time. And so what the theory is that the matter being pushed out of the way, or the stuff being pushed out of the way, is that dark matter. And so black holes that are creating these wormholes and creating this need for this other matter to move is actually, as the more of these things come into existence, moving space and time outward, making it expand. I think that's a really interesting theory.
So one of the things you've often said, Todd, is...
Sorry, I just blacked out for a little bit. Can you go back to the beginning, Todd?
So one of the things you've often brought up is that when someone in a spacecraft approaches a black hole, they undergo a spaghettification. I've heard you reference the term on several occasions. So if we think about our descendants one day leveraging these wormholes for transportation across the universe, how do you kind of get around the spaghettification problem?
That only happens if you fall into it. I mean, according to what we think we know.
You gotta bump that, mate. You gotta be stronger than the black hole. Resist the spaghettification.
Like a resistance.
Good luck.
Yeah.
But like, so spaghettification just means, you know, I go into the black hole, and because my feet are closer to the singularity than my head, at some point,
right,
the gravity of that is gonna rip my feet away from my head, even though they're so close to each other.
Yeah, the tidal forces.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Although Neil deGrasse Tyson did say in an interview I watched recently that he thinks if you did a barrel roll, you could at least last a little bit longer as you fall into a black hole.
Fascinating observation. Good to know. By a great man of our day, yeah. Neil deGrasse.
He's a great man. Based here in our home, New York City. So, Neil, if you happen to be listening to this.
Why?
We love you.
Yeah, we love you, and come on board. So...
I also read something interesting the other day about, you know, if you were to pass in through the, going past the event horizon, not so much going to the singularity before that point of spaghettification, as you cross the event horizon, you wouldn't actually see somebody experience that spaghettification, but because the light was no longer able to escape, it would almost, as they had crossed, it would appear to be that they just stopped exactly where they were and froze in place. And then they would just kind of fade.
Yep.
And they would just kind of fade out.
And Mark.
Which I think would be kind of a cool way to leave a room. Like when you're leaving a party. Just like freeze in place in the doorway, like in a pose where you're waving goodbye. And then you just kind of like.
So like what pose would you each adopt as you moved closer to the black hole? I want to hear every answer. Don't you only get one shot at this?
Oh, I was talking about leaving a party, but if I'm going into a black hole, I mean, I would have to do something like cheesy and ironic, maybe like a thumbs up or like a wolf pack symbol. That would be a pretty good one.
Could do the Saturday Night Fever point.
Nice.
John Travolta.
That's not bad.
You'd also
the black hole.
You can incorporate this. You'd also start redshifting. So you'd go from your normal color to turning more and more red. So I don't know if that
it may have actually been that you would redshift out, not just like fade out.
That's crazy. I mean, you never would expect this in your day-to-day life, and to think that it happens right at the event horizon. Some people probably would want a pelvic thrust toward the black hole in order to experience spaghettification.
Well, if we didn't before, we want to now. That's for sure.
If you're gonna spaghettify, I mean, in your last moments of life, you might as well spaghettify the right way, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Is there any wrong way?
Hey guys, can I talk a little bit about gravitational lensing here? Because that is probably my favorite part.
Yeah,
of
please go for it.
I would love that.
So have you ever heard of Macho-96.BL5?
No. Obviously.
Is that a candy?
It is a star, in fact. And so they took some pictures of it from ground telescopes. And all of a sudden, it was getting much brighter, and no one could really figure out why. So our friendly Hubble telescope came in and took a much more clear picture of it. And it turns out it was two copies of the exact same star right next to each other. And so they're trying to figure this out. And what they determined was that a black hole had passed between the Earth and this object, causing two mirror images of the star to appear and causing it to appear to be brighter from Earth.
What?
Pretty cool. There's pictures online if you want to check it out. But that is gravitational lensing, like a lens. The black hole bends light around it, and then we can see it here on Earth.
So I guess with billions of potential black holes spread out throughout the universe and all this lensing going on, I mean, how do we know that what we're looking at from Earth is actually the universe and not just these doubles that you've referenced?
Well, that's a good point. I'll leave that to the professional astronomers, but I know for sure that these two were directly next to each other, so close to each other that it didn't make sense gravitationally that it would be a binary system.
Ah, I see. So that you're saying they would have been pulled towards each other, or they would have been acting way differently if there was actually two of them.
Right. And they appeared the exact same distance and brightness. And that wouldn't be possible unless the black hole moved between them. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I had not heard about that.
That is really cool. And I want to address just the mentality there of leaving it to the professionals. I think we need to just consider the fact that now we have a podcast. I think that kind of makes us the professionals. I think we should just make a declarative statement on what is happening on things. You know, like, we're essentially the authority on these matters now.
Yeah, so Alex, answer the damn question.
Definitively, correctly.
Well, Todd's leading the podcast, so I'll leave it to him.
I'll take it.
Nate, so you're talking about all these celestial bodies and all these black holes. It's actually 4% of what you see is just a duplication because of a black hole passing.
Wow.
Erroneous.
That's amazing.
It's an amazing fact.
Mark knows amazing amount of facts. So I'm looking at a picture right now of the supermassive black hole, Messier 87. I think this is the one that they got the picture of.
That's the one with the picture, yeah.
Now, why is it confused with M83, the French band?
Or Mark Messier.
Didn't you guys go to an M83 concert?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. In Central Park, I think.
Nice.
So I'm looking at the photo. The bottom of it is like more bulbous and bright than the top. I mean, are accretion disks uneven? I mean, how does that all work?
I can tell you this. This I know the answer to. So this is the true answer. Hopefully for our listeners, you pull up, just Google M87 image. I'm sure you've seen it already. But if not, what you'll notice to Nate's point is one side is brighter than the other. And that's to do with the redshifting or the way light appears to us, depending upon the relation of its movement to where you are. So what you're seeing is the light rotating, let's just say clockwise or counterclockwise in this case. And as it comes around towards that 9 o'clock position, it's coming towards us faster than the other side, which is going away. And so you see a brighter impact of that light as a result of it moving towards us in that way. So that's why. And the other interesting thing about that, Nate, is it is more, instead of like the sort of halo effect that surrounds the top and bottom, like if you watch Interstellar, the thing has a ring like Saturn, but then it kind of curves
an accretion disk.
There you go. It has the accretion disk, but Saturn doesn't have an accretion disk. I'm just for visual, Mark. The reason why it goes up in the back is because of what we're just talking about, that lensing effect, right? Because you can actually see behind a black hole from the front of it because all the light from directly behind it is being shown on top or on bottom.
So this is lensing to an intense degree.
How
fast is this thing spinning?
That particular one?
Yeah.
Well, we're the experts now, right?
A trillion miles an hour.
Yeah.
600,000 miles an hour?
690 miles an hour. It's actually a lot slower than you think.
Oh, 690 miles per hour.
Fact check.
Another interesting accretion disk fact here, or fact, I guess theory, kind of, sort of fact. So hypothetically, from the accretion disk, because, you've got photons that are all kind of, we'll say, stuck in orbit around the black hole. If you were at the accretion disk and you looked to the left, you would theoretically see the back of your head looking back at you because the photons around it are unable to escape. They're kind of stuck in that ring.
So the photons that you would ultimately see, I mean, granted, it would be, you know, far in the distance, but you would basically be looking around the orbit.
And who wants to look at the back of their own head?
I do. Have you ever seen the back of your own head?
I do.
You've never, none of us have seen it with our own eyes.
So I was looking through also some terms of the of black holes that we should know. Obviously, Event Horizon is one that that hopefully everyone should know. Have you guys ever seen that movie, Event Horizon?
Yes.
From 1995? Long time ago.
Yeah.
Is that the one with Lawrence Fishburne?
Yes, and Sam Neill.
That's the guy from Jurassic Park.
And, right, and haunted my dreams in young childhood. Did you know that there is a director's cut out there somewhere floating around that was so scary that it caused most of the test audience to vomit?
I did not know that.
And then they asked them to tone it down a little bit. So they did. So that's the movie you saw in theaters or at home, the toned down version. But out there somewhere is a director's cut that could
have ever vomited from fear.
Right now, what I'm imagining is like, how many people are there right now in asylums who are just sitting in the corner of a padded cell, like shivering and rocking back and forth because they were in a test audience for that movie?
I'm telling you, man.
That's
so
crazy.
Who do you think is going to be the first man to walk on the surface of a black hole and then come back?
A robotic man.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so.
Sounds like a job for Robot Mark.
I heard George Washington might have already done that.
I might have heard that as well.
Yeah.
Did you see that on the internet and Reddit? I think I
Yeah, I think so.
And that was one of those facts. Yep. But if you think about it, well, this is my theory. You guys can tell me this is crazy, right? But so you think about how the universe came into existence, right? Mm-hmm. So it was 13.8 billion years ago, Big Bang, although they're questioning that now. Wouldn't it make sense that if everything gets eventually sucked, like if our universe keeps expanding, eventually all the stars are going to die. Everything is going to either turn inert or into a black hole or just be floating in total darkness billions and billions of years from now. At some point, everything kind of congeals and goes back towards wherever there is the most gravity. Wouldn't it make sense that, yeah, not that, well, so the big crush is something I firmly believe in, but then it was disproven by science, so I can't really believe in it anymore. But I'm saying, what if when you go through a black hole, what's really happening is you're expunged into a brand new universe. And so you come in one side as part of this leftover remnant and everything gets jumbled up in this big, like super small, tiny space, but everything kind of gets congealed and then shot out the other end in a, what they call a white hole, right? The explosive part out. Why can't that just be what Big Bang
is? It's like a white foamy spray just coming out.
That's exactly right.
Into this new universe.
All over the universe.
And that's how life begins.
It's exactly how life begins. The seed of the universe, one would say.
That's very interesting, Todd.
That is good.
I hadn't thought about that.
That is very interesting. How would you test something like that?
You got to throw the first man into it, see where he winds up.
Well, Matthew McConaughey also, I believe, has already done this.
He did.
We can ask him.
Yeah.
Although he ended up in the bookshelf of his own house, I find that unlikely.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to wind up in a bookshelf. Like, if I could pick anywhere in the universe, he got the shaft on that one a little bit.
Bookshelf is pretty low.
What I want to know is that the bookshelf that everybody would end up in, or you just end up in your own bookshelf?
It's God's bookshelf.
That was actually Nathan's library. Nathan's probably the only person in the world. Nathan's a very avid reader to our listeners, but Nathan would probably be the only person very happy with where
McConaughey popping right in that bookshelf
with where he wound up.
It's pretty nice in here.
I think that's a really profound question, Mark. Do you end up in your own bookshelf or just a bookshelf?
The bookshelf.
I'm going to have to ponder that for a while.
Are you really?
Yes. Pondering as we speak.
So what do you guys think about – so actually, Alex, let me toss this over to you. I think you were on Reddit and you saw a pretty cool fact about looking back at the Earth 75 light years away. That, to me, is a really interesting concept. You want to share that?
Well, I believe what you're talking about, Todd, is if you were somehow able to travel in a wormhole from the Earth to a point 75 light years away, you could watch all of human history. I guess you get a really powerful telescope, right? More powerful than we have today. You could watch all of human history unfold from World War II until today.
But you couldn't, let's say then you could take the wormhole back. You would never be able to influence it. So mm-hmm. like, what if that's time travel? What if that's, you know, the concept of it? There is no time travel. It's just viewing travel.
Right, because there's a frontier of that light from an event that occurred. And if you could get further enough away that it was then getting to you, it'd be like you were back in time from an information reception standpoint.
Yeah. So what
it's
I would
want most other types of time travel, there's too many paradoxes for it to work. I mean, who knows for sure, but that's what it seems like to me. So you could be onto something there.
And what if now, as a result of that, there's a planet that somebody establishes 75 light years away from Earth, and I don't even need it to be that far, right, when this wormhole comes about that takes us there, and that's where all gambling takes place.
Oh.
Right? And that's where all the bookies live. You know, FanDuel is legal there. DraftKings is legal there.
Are you talking about New Jersey?
Yeah, so that is New Jersey.
Right. Someone flung it off
into space. Bodog.com.
Yeah. Dude, I got to tell you, man, I've been trying to place these bets, and being in New York, I do wish I had a wormhole over to New Jersey.
Gambling planet.
The gambling planet.
If I had a wormhole to anywhere, it would not be New Jersey.
So what about these guys who keep trying to tell us that we might actually live inside of a black hole right now, and everything we know is inside of a black hole? Have you ever heard that theory?
No, that who's telling you that?
Well, it's being punted around in places.
I think people are messing with you, man.
Oh, man. Well, how would that work? Because
no, I mean, that could theoretically work. Wouldn't time slow down as you approach the singularity? And so crossing the horizon isn't when spaghettification would occur. So if time had slowed down, you'd also be getting farther away from everything. So I think it would appear to be as though everything around you were expanding.
Oh my God, Mark. That's the most profound thing that I've ever heard.
Mark just crushed that.
You just dominated that.
Wow.
Mark, given everything we've talked about tonight, I'll give you you get the Space Award.
Space Award!
You're the cadet of the week. For that.
Oh my gosh. So first and foremost, I would like to thank God, obviously, for potentially maybe creating the universe. We'll get to the heart of that in a later episode. But we do obviously have an answer.
That's right.
Yeah, I want to thank my family, my daughter. Where would I be without you? I wouldn't have the Space Award, that's for sure.
Well, listen, guys, this has been an awesome first episode. And to all of our listeners, we hope you come back for the next one, where our topic will be, do aliens exist? Woo! So don't miss out on that one. Hey, guys, thank you so much for joining today. Looking forward to the next chat. I really hope we come up with a cool slogan or catchphrase to send them off. If you guys can think of anything, please do. If not, live long and prosper.
Space Cadets out.